From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 20th day of January 2017. It's inaugural day. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzlow. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. We'll be joined a bit later by Chad Colby and Ron Moore. Chad is with Central Illinois Ag. That's the Case IH dealer out of Atlanta, Illinois. And Ron is the president of the American Soybean Association, but more importantly, a farmer from Knox County, Illinois. Both are participating in today's inaugural parade. We'll get some thoughts from them about the parade, and we'll talk to Ron about his expectations with the Trump administration and agricultural policy over the next 4 years. We'll do all of that right here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. We'll check the weather forecast, too, and with Eric Snodgrass from Agricable on this Friday afternoon.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this 20th day of January. It's Inauguration Day. Mike Zuzlow at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Atchison, Kansas now joined us. Good afternoon to you, Michael.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Hey, I got to ask you really quickly, because this one I think is probably some good news in the offing. Wheat futures managed to gain again today, and they've had kind of a nice couple of upticks. What do you think of that market?
I think you're seeing a lot more positive reaction in the wheat as we come out of that unbelievably low winter wheat acreage number, Todd, and we also see the corn starting to support the wheat as well. And I say that because the March corn has had its best weekly close since July 15th, the first close in March corn above the 200-day moving average going all the way back to June 23rd of last year. So I think we've been between the extremely strong export sales for corn, the terrifically low winter wheat acres for the United States, and now we're starting to see a dollar that is taming down, especially as we go through the new administration's cabinet picks, find out who they are, what they're saying. Now we've transitioned into a new administration, gotten past the inaugural speech, and very volatile outside market action. Essentially, the dollar has done nothing but tread water and has stayed below some critical resistance levels. So I think the investor flows are coming into the wheat in the form of that long-awaited short covering by the managed money. And I say that because it looked to me today, as far as a quote Trump bump, you know, that we talked about in the equities after the election, we didn't get that in the commodities, but now we're starting to see a Trump bump in crude oil, gold, silver, coffee, corn, and wheat. So I think there's a reason for that. Is primarily it's part of a basket of improved investor sentiment.
So investors are feeling better. How long do you suppose that will stick with them? And what does Trump have to do in order to make that continue?
Well, I think it goes back to when we all shake it out and settle it down. And we had the World Economic Forum this week as well, which a lot of information came out of. And the main theme there was, let's not talk ourselves into a financial crisis or trade slowdown by protectionism. And I think that revolves back around not just in the United States, but in all the countries, and especially this rise in populism, which I think there, to some degree, is genuine reason for, regardless of what side of the political spectrum you're on. I think the end result, and at the end of the day, you don't want to see, if you're in the commodity world, China being dubbed a currency manipulator, because I think that ratchets up the defensive posture of the world's two largest economies. And with what China could be able to do successfully in terms of coming out of a debt-fed growth pattern and actually see some actual growth that's not fed by the government feeding these state-owned enterprises, I think you could see a decent 2017 for the two largest economies of the world. And I think that would go a long way in healing, going back around to this populist issue, going back around and healing some of these issues that this financial crisis has opened up.
So let's come back to the corn. We finished, at 370 for the week on the March contract. The weekly chart looks pretty good, frankly. Can we push through that? That would be, up, where the last time we were up there was sometime in July. Is that right? I think that's correct.
Yes.
Yeah. So
that's 100% right. Other than overbought conditions, I mean, and we're pretty extremely overbought on the weekly corn chart, if you ask me, on the stochastics. Other than that, I think fundamentals, and this goes back to the January report and what it was able to do for us, and which that brought us back to, I think, upward bias outside, breaking out of a trading range, which now we have done after this week, going all the way back to the December report. But I think there's a couple things that could, yes, allow us to go higher and fight the high and overbought stochastics. First and foremost is the South American weather. We're turning drier, and that's benefiting the Argentinian crop that's been flooded. But at the exact same time, Mato Grosso, which is the province for the second crop corn, has been getting rains. It's been noted in the news wires. The weather models are suggesting more rains. That's not a good sign for getting the beans harvested and that second crop corn planted right behind it. I think the second feature would obviously be the U.S. dollar and continued strong export pace like we saw in today's export sales. Old crop corn export sales for corn, Todd, up 69% versus a four-week average and a one-month high with Japan, the noted number one buyer. So we see the currencies playing a role here with the stronger Japanese yen. So fundamentals in wheat, fundamentals in corn. Mexican National Farm Federation came out this week, said weak peso, high fuel prices equal lower corn acres, equal higher tortilla prices. We're looking at 20% more corn imports in Mexico in 2017. But here again, we circle back to the politics and the currency. So yes, we could go up another notch. I'm selling into it starting today with the 5% increment on old crop corn.
Oh, I see. Doing anything on new crop at all?
Not yet. I would really like to see the basis price action for another week or two. I've had the sense that maybe we've had some upper Midwest problems getting corn out since it's gotten so frozen up there in Minnesota and the Dakotas. I'm starting to see basis levels jump dramatically. Savannah, Illinois jumped 12 cents in one day this week. I think the cash market could do a little bit more to help the new crop. So I'm going to be watching that before making some 17 recommendations.
Hey, thanks so much for being with me this afternoon.
My pleasure, sir. Thanks for all your hard work.
Thank you for yours too, Mike. Mike Zuzalo, of course, is with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. In today's agricultural news, the United States has a new president, and he's making beachheads in many places at USDA. Sam Clovis will lead that charge. Clovis was a co-chair and policy advisor for Trump's campaign and is headed to the department today to start laying the groundwork for the president's agenda. The charismatic Iowan is leading Trump's beachhead team for the USDA, a crew that will hire staff and begin crafting policy while Sonny Perdue awaits Senate confirmation as the next U.S. Secretary of Agriculture. Clovis's new assignment is part of the incoming administration's effort to build on the work of the transition's agency landing teams and ensure a smooth assumption of power. The transition staff has been building the beachhead teams for months. Some 536 temporary political appointees will be dispatched in smaller groups across the federal government to hold down the fort as the new administration works to fill roughly 5,000 political positions, some of which require Senate confirmation. There are 250 political posts at USDA, ranging from deputy and undersecretaries to chiefs of staff, spokespersons, and State Farm Service Agency administrators, though most of them do not require a Senate sign-off. Perdue, the Republican governor of Georgia from 2003 to 2011, is likely to bring in a crop of ag professionals from his network of connections. And the White House, of course, will also have a role in filling key spots. Well, no sooner than Donald Trump has taken office, the GOP's trade critics have begun to push back. That's right, the Republicans. The same day that Donald Trump takes office, Senator Mike Lee will launch an effort to rein in the White House's congressionally granted authority to raise tariffs. The Utah Republican today will introduce his Global Trade Accountability Act, which would subject any of Trump's trade actions to congressional approval. On that note, business interest, along with agriculture groups, want the new administration to reconsider the Trans-Pacific Partnership, a trade deal incoming President Donald Trump has vowed to drop on day one, once in office. The Wall Street Journal reports the groups are arguing that the Trump administration does not have to accept the current agreement negotiated by the Obama administration. Rather, Trump could look to make changes to the deal, rename it, and turn TPP into a Trump initiative to boost U.S. exports to Asia and write new trade rules for the Asian Pacific region. Among those urging the Trump team to take another look at the Asia-Pacific deal are the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, the Business Roundtable, the American Farm Bureau Federation, and a number of companies. The Trans-Pacific Partnership would mean billions of dollars in agricultural sales thanks to improved exports, but chances are still slim of seeing the agreement move forward in the near future. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Friday afternoon. It's inaugural day in Washington, D.C. Donald Trump has taken the oath of office, and we're talking now with Chad Colby. He will be in the inaugural parade this afternoon. Chad, thanks for being with us. You're with Central Illinois Ag out of Atlanta, Illinois. You show up in lots of places across the country as an advocate. And do a lot of drone work. Most of the farmer listeners probably will have seen you in action somewhere. You're also with Max Armstrong at the moment at his behest this week in agribusiness. And the Rural Tractor Brigade, you're lined up there. How many tractors do you have with you today?
You know, I believe there's 13 of us. We got here about 6 o'clock this morning. Tractors came in through the evening, went through the inspection process, and it's... You know, it's a really amazing day for our country. We're all really excited about that, of course. But, you know, for agriculture, this is a really neat thing, and it's really exciting to be a part of it.
Yeah, tractors haven't been in the Capitol, at least not farm tractors, I suppose, since the AAM had their protest back in the 1970s. Kind of nice to have them there in support of a president, I suppose.
You know, it is. And I think the ironic part of it today is, you know, as we're here, I'm looking out the window of the tractor right now, and you know, there's obviously all kinds of security and different forms of government that are here up and down these streets. And boy, it's neat to see the people come over and, you know, stand in front of a tractor and take a picture and talk to a lot of the guys that are here. You know, Zippy Duvall's here, the president of the Farm Bureau, and just a whole bunch of great guys. And, you know, it's an exciting day for agriculture, and it's just, you know, it's very special, and we're excited to bring it. It's fun to talk to you today.
Did you try to ask them if you could fly your drone?
No, I did not. Here's what I am happy to tell you is initially I had several GoPros packed up and then was told I couldn't bring any GoPros. But in the last minute, we were allowed. So I do have a GoPro on the tractor. So there will be some amazing footage from today's event. And man, you can tell it in my voice. I mean, what a real treat. To show the passion of agriculture to so many millions and millions of people around the world. This is really neat.
Yeah, so I know you'll be able to find that video. I would be really positive, I suppose, on your Twitter account. That's @TheChadColby, and it's spelled just kind of the way you think it is, with a C on both of those. Any place else you'll post it?
You know, it'll be on, I would go to Twitter there first, like you said. It'll also be, if you search my name on Facebook, you can find it there. And obviously, this week in agribusiness, on the RFD network, it's going to be played. We'll be sharing everything from here. It's, you know, it's just what a unique aspect to have a modern farm tractor, you know, driving down through the streets of Washington, D.C. on such a special day. It's, you know, I can't stress it to you enough. My phone has been going crazy all day with farm friends of mine truly around the world that have been sending messages and it's just a neat day for agriculture.
Well, you have fun, and thank you so much for taking time to talk with us. And I'm sure we'll run into you at one of the winter meetings this winter.
You got it. Sounds great. Thanks for your call today, and have a great day.
You too, Chad. That, of course, is Chad Colby. He's with Central Illinois Ag, and you can find him on Twitter @TheChadColby. So Chad Colby's just one of the folks that is in line for the inaugural parade and the tractor brigade that Rural Television has been putting together, along with several other folks. Other people that are there include another Illinoisan, Ron Moore, who's from Knox County and the president of the American Soybean Association, now joins us. Ron and I traveled to Haiti together a few years ago. Ron, I think this is probably a highlight of where you've been for a while. What's it like to be?
Yeah, it's pretty exciting, Todd. It's, once in a lifetime opportunity for myself and my wife, Deb.
So I've got a different question for you, though.
Yep.
We've got a new administration. Rural America helped to put Donald Trump into office. What are your expectations as president of the American Soybean Association?
Well, our expectations are we have our work cut out for us. Obviously, Mr. Trump is a businessman, and we hope he understands the importance of trade for soybeans in particular, but all of agriculture, if we look to continue to move out of these prices that have been depressed for the last two or three years and get in some places where we need to have some more profitability back in agriculture. We were encouraged with his appointment here this couple of days ago of Governor Perdue to be Secretary of Agriculture. Mr. Trump has fulfilled his pledge to put a farmer in that slot. And Mr. Perdue grew up on a farm and did some farming and also operates several agribusinesses, along with being the former governor of the great state of Georgia. So we're optimistic for that appointment.
Were you happy with Scott Pruitt's hearing earlier in the week? He is the nominee for U.S. EPA administrator.
Yeah, we're pleased that we have someone who is going to hopefully be the administrator of EPA that's going to maybe roll back some of these ridiculous regulations that are coming down the out of Washington, D.C., primarily the waters of the U.S., but also maybe use some science to get some of these traits that are being languished in the EPA for approval process. There's several different soybean and corn traits that are waiting to get approved, and we want to make sure that they use sound science to get those things approved and give us farmers the tools that we need to combat some of these problem weeds and pests that we're facing right now.
Back to the thing of the hand, you are there at the parade. What kind of tractor will you be driving?
I'll be driving a John Deere 6150R. It's 150 horsepower John Deere front wheel assist tractor. And there's 13 tractors in the parade here. There's John Deere and Case IH, AGCO, Massey Ferguson, Kubota, and Mahindra. So a lot of different companies represented here. And we're here representing the heartland of America, so to speak. The rural America that helped President-elect Trump win the election here in November. So, we're here representing agriculture and very proud to be here on the parade today.
And probably I would say for you, proud to be driving a John Deere, a tractor that most assuredly was made at their tractor plant in Iowa.
Yeah, very much so. Right in the heartland of the U.S.
All right. Hey, Ron, have fun today. Thanks so much for being with me.
Hey, thank you, Todd. We'll talk to you later.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
That's Knox County, Illinois farmer and president of the American Soybean Association, Ron Moore. He and Chad Colby, who is with Central Illinois Ag, and a series of other folks, including Mark Oppold from RFD-TV and Max Armstrong, farm broadcaster, are piloting some farm tractors through the streets of Washington, D.C. today in the inaugural parade. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Friday afternoon. Eric Snodgrass joins us from Agrible to discuss the weather forecast. Let's start here in the United States, where it looks like we've got some warm temperatures on tap.
Yeah, and those warm temperatures are complements of a huge ridge in the jet stream that's setting up over the Hudson Bay. They're going to have temperatures in that part of the world that might be 20 to 30 degrees Fahrenheit above average. And where we are down here south of that, in Illinois, we might see temperatures topping 60 degrees tomorrow in Champaign. In fact, the whole eastern half of the country, because of that ridge that's setting up over the Hudson Bay, is going to be treated to some nice warm weather here in mid-January. But, the big thing that I'm looking at with that ridge is what it's doing out west. And out west, because of the ridge in the east, we're getting a pretty deep trough. In fact, Alaska earlier this week, saw temperatures. This is an anchorage below minus 50 degrees Fahrenheit. We've got some cold air all along the West Coast of North America. Here's the thing that that's doing. That's really helping set up for some strong onshore flow, which we've seen now for over 30 days in the West, packing in the snow. The snow reporting stations in the Sierra Nevada mountains are at nearly 200% of average snowfall for this time of year. And this is huge for the drought in California. And the other thing that that's doing is it's putting another trough that's going to sneak in kind of behind that ridge later on this weekend. That's going to come into the southeastern part of the United States, which is the other big spot in the country we're watching for drought. That drought has been eroding very slowly, but it's been eroding for the last about 30 days as well. And this next few days is going to not only see a lot of precipitation in the southeast where that drought's really still hanging on, but even the potential for some severe weather. So what we've got is a weather pattern in the short term that's really setting things up to help alleviate drought in a couple of places in the country where the drought has really got a stronghold. And the good thing is that as we start to look forward to the next growing season, eliminating drought in winter and the start of spring is a good thing.
As you look forward into February, what do you see?
Yeah, so the big thing is that when I look to the start of February, the end of January, start of February, I see this pattern flip-flopping. What I mean by that is a ridge building out west and a deep trough building in the east. And with that trough comes unsettled weather, potentially some snow here for the Midwest, and certainly some colder temperatures again. So don't think, you know, as this weekend gets here that we're heading towards spring right away. Don't forget, we still got February to get through, and we're seeing a definite pattern change for the start of February.
A quick brief on South America.
Sure. Brazil seems to be doing quite well. The rains have returned, soil moisture is up. We've been talking about that the last couple of months, and we're expecting their crop to do quite well. The adversity has been in Argentina. They were wet in October, then dry in November, December. Then they got wet again in the first part of January, and now it's split. The northern half of their growing region is dry. The southern half is wet. And all that just means that they've had a lot of on-again, off-again kind of stuff going on with the rain. And that's going to be, potentially causing some problems because they at times had some flooding rains where the rain stood in the field for several days. And we know what that does to soybeans. Overall, the South American crop still looks good, but that's still some stresses there in Argentina.
Do you have an outlook for the spring here in the United States?
Yeah, let's give a preliminary outlook for this spring. Here's what we're looking at. Right now, our long-range forecast guidance at Agrible is picking up on the potential for a spring very similar to 2016. What I mean by that is maybe a little bit earlier accumulation of growing degree days in late April, in the beginning of May, which signals a slightly warmer than average start to the season. The other good news is that drought situation that's kind of setting up a little bit to our west and south is being eliminated in the short term. And I think all of that points to a decent start to the 2017 growing season.
Hey, thanks so much. And we appreciate you taking the time with us today.
Yeah, thank you.
And of course, Eric Snodgrass, he is with Agrible, joins us on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm Todd Gleason.